Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I am Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Clippers can shut down Kevin Durant again. But we start with the NFL. Spanish-born American philosopher and essayist George Santayana is perhaps best known for his five-volume book, The Life of Reason. In volume one, he coined the phrase, "Those who cannot remember history are doomed to repeat it." I thought of Santayana this morning when thinking of the Cleveland Browns and the release of the 2019 NFL schedule. Coming off a promising 7-8-1 season, the Browns are featured in four primetime games. NFL schedule makers made what we already knew official, the addition of Odell Beckham Jr. to Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, and Myles Garrett made the Browns the hot new boy band of the fall. They're the new kids on the NFL block. Their debut season is more anticipated and hyped than Hanging Tough and Step by Step, which reminds me of another Santayana philosophical phrase. Skepticism, like chastity, should not be relinquished too readily. You see, Cleveland's history should make Browns fans highly skeptical. Okay, I get that LeBron James brought the city a world championship. I get that the Cleveland Indians played in the 2016 World Series. Oh, and I even know that the Cleveland Monsters, the hockey minor league affiliate of the Columbus Blue Jackets, won the AHL Calder Cup championship in 2016. But we're talking about football. And everybody in Cleveland knows how cursed the Browns are. Everybody in Cleveland knows every time things look good for the Browns, something bad happens. Let's remember the history, shall we? Red Wright, 88. The Browns blew a playoff game to the Raiders in the 1981 AFC playoffs when they threw a needless pass and interception with 1 minute to play. The drive. John Elway and the Broncos went 98 yards in the 1986 AFC Championship and denied the Browns a Super Bowl appearance. The fumble, Ernest Biner fumbled at the 2 late in the 1987 AFC Championship. And how about Bill Belichick? The Browns employed the greatest football coach in NFL history as their head coach before the New England Patriots. Need I go on? But this is about more than history, though. This is about the weight of expectations, the burden of being the hunted, and the lack of experience in winning. Winning is a habit and a culture foreign to the Cleveland players who are being led by a first-time head coach, Freddie Kitchens. With Odell and Jarvis, the Browns are being compared to the late 1990s Minnesota Vikings teams that featured Randy Moss and Chris Carter. Those Viking teams won 36 games over a 3-year stretch. Those teams were led by Denny Green, who had 6 years head coaching experience by the time he drafted Randy Moss in 1998. A rookie coach dealing with OBJ. History says this season won't go well for the Browns. All right, joining the desk now is former Super Bowl champion Chris Canty. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Will the Browns crumble under the spotlight?
No, not at all. It's amazing that this team wasn't hyped up and last year went out there and won 7 ball games, a couple plays away from winning and having a winning season. So this was a
spoken like a man that never won a Super Bowl.
But spoken like a man that never raised his hand and said, "That's my primary goal." But y'all don't want to know about me. A lot of sorry players won Super Bowl. They wasn't all pro, though. Here's the thing. This was substance built. This was substance based. And this was a situation.
7 games.
The Cleveland Browns, let's stay in context now. They built up to 7 games off of substance. With an offensive coordinator who was thrown into the mix mid-season, and you saw a different Baker Mayfield, even though he was having a good season, it went to a damn good season. You saw this team respond. You saw this team even in their one primetime moment last year on Thursday night when Baker Mayfield made a name for himself. To the tune of, I had to come in here, hear Whitlock, about Baker Mayfield's going to be more to Cleveland than LeBron James.
Wow.
Okay, if that's not substance built, then what was it? Sizzle? No. So now all of a sudden they get hype. And this is funny. Me in the locker room, I never cared about the hyped up team. I never hunted the team that everyone was talking about. I was just hunting the teams that I knew were damn good. Like the Chiefs, like the Patriots, like the Rams, you know, Cowboys. Like teams that are good are the ones that get your blood boiling because you know you got to bring your best to even be in competition with them. But the teams that everyone's talking about, we all know most of those are sizzle. This is not a sizzle team. This team wasn't talked about last year and built themselves up into a conversation. Now they're on the next tier. Let's respect that.
Well, the one thing I'll say, Marcellus, because you talked about wanting to hunt the teams that you know are going to be good. One of the things that you have to be concerned with a young football team is them taking opponents for granted. And I know it's crazy to say that because we're talking about the Cleveland Browns, a team two seasons ago that went winless. But, I mean, this young team, this is an impressive collection of young talent, but there's still a learning curve that comes along with dealing with these types of expectations. And we don't know how Freddie Kitchens is going to respond in his first year as the head coach of the Browns. Now, I know Freddie. He was on the staff with the Dallas Cowboys during the Parcells years. I know that he's going to be able to establish a good rapport with the players, but again, it's different when you're the head coach and you're not just focusing on one side of the ball. We don't know how Freddie Kitchens is going to do from a game management standpoint when he's the head guy. We don't know. Yeah. Those are still legitimate questions coming into this season.
However, let's not get absurd with the expectations. Let's not exaggerate what they are. Vegas is saying this team can win 9 games. They won 7 last year, so they're supposed to be better. Yes, and I think they are going to be better. But to think that this is a Super Bowl winning team, this is not a contender for that.
No.
They're just going to get a lot of attention in their process.
Yeah. OBJ, when he shows up, the spotlight comes with him. Mm-hmm. And spotlight in New York is one thing. You can spread that around. Eli's got Super Bowls. Everybody in Cleveland, they have nothing really on their resume. Jarvis Landry's done well, relatively well. Oh, yeah. Myles Garrett has shown some flashes.
Oh, yeah.
But in terms of day in, day out, living under the spotlight of expectations and the attention. Just look, man, NFL players, when OBJ and Jarvis Landry show up and put on the little pregame show and all that, and you got 4 primetime games, they're going to get everybody's A game. Baker Mayfield, I call him Little Smokey. He talks. He loves the smoke and the attention.
I love it.
They are going to get people's A games consistently. And when you start talking about a first-time head coach dealing with OBJ, There's some potential issues.
I'm with you, Whitlock. I'm a little bit skeptical of this Cleveland Browns team. Again, I like the talent on paper, but how is Freddie Kitchens going to manage all those big personalities? Now, I know that OBJ made some headlines in New York the last couple of seasons for all the wrong reasons, but I think that OBJ's source of contention with that organization was because they didn't do a lot of high-level winning. The Giants had 50 losses over the course of the last 5 seasons. So a guy that's a top competitor and arguably the best at his position and a guy that depends on the quarterback in order to do his job, I can understand how he would get frustrated with the Giants and with Eli Manning. But in looking at this experiment that is the Browns in 2019, I think that John Dorsey has given himself every opportunity to try to get this right. Because he traded for OBJ, and guess what? They've got Adam Henry, his position coach from the Giants and from LSU, as their wide receivers coach there, along with his former teammate at LSU and Jarvis Landry. They went out and they hired Steve Wilks, a former defensive coordinator, but a head coach as well with the Arizona Cardinals. He's got that experience. That's something Freddie Kitchens can lean on. That's something tangible. So we don't know how it's all going to work out, but I think that they position themselves to give themselves the best chance for it to have a positive result.
Marcellus, you don't have any concerns about Freddie Kitchens?
No. Look, you know me. I'm a track and field lover. That's my primary and favorite sport. And I tell you what happened with the 4-minute mile barrier that no one broke for thousands of years, and then finally one person breaks it and dozens break it within the next month. What happens is once you see somebody accomplish something, you feel encouraged by that. If I'm Freddie Kitchens, I'm encouraged by Sean McVay and his young success. I'm encouraged by Matt Nagy going out there winning 12 wins in his first year as a head coach. So sometimes I don't need to have that experience myself. I can look somewhere else and say, hey, I've seen young talent at the coaching position win and young talent on the field win. Let's rewind, because I was on the field when Tom Brady first stepped on the scene and we saw a Drew Bledsoe go down. And this is not TB12. This is Tom Brady, 6th-round draft choice, who won a Super Bowl, injected into a team. And I'm not saying this team is winning a Super Bowl, but there was tremendous success from a guy that no one expected it from. Now, this is a guy who has more expectations and, let's say, more initial talent in Baker Mayfield. Why wouldn't we wait and see if that blossoms.
Well, I think in New England, what came to be revealed is that Bill Belichick's the greatest coach.
But not at that time.
No, no.
He was coming off of 5 of 7 losing seasons.
That's what came to be revealed.
Right?
And so, again, I think Baker Mayfield is a talent and showed himself to be a talent. Tom Brady showed. But it's the coach, again, that will be the key driver in terms of bringing this all together. And I just think Matt Nagy, I don't think there were great expectations when he got there. Sean McVay, he's got to jump over Jeff Fisher's very low 8-8 bar. Mm. Not great expectations. Freddie Kitchens won't have the ability to catch anybody by surprise because the Browns are, without having done anything, never have won a Super Bowl,
right,
haven't been to the playoffs since 2002. They're the new, they're Mark and Donnie Wahlberg, man. They are the new kids on the block. They put out, it's like their first album, New Kids on the Block, and now here they are, their second album's coming out,
yeah.
Hanging Tough, which sold more than anything else. That's the expectations in Cleveland. You about to jump over this bar, you're going to the next level. And I just think Pittsburgh, John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, two of the most tenured coaches, probably second and third behind Bill Belichick, they're going to have something to say
real
about
quick. If they can split those four games between Baltimore and Pittsburgh, this team should go 4-2 in the division. And then you look at their toughest games outside of the division, you're talking about the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Patriots. So, I mean, on paper...
That's three L's.
You can say that's three L's, and you can throw in another ugly L, whether it's the Denver Broncos or somebody along those lines, but guess what? That still puts the Browns in a situation where they can win 9 or 10 ball games.
And Chris, don't fall victim to that. We've all been there before when the season and the schedule's revealed.
Listen,
brain to paper is never correct. Like, whatever you think there's going to be some hard wins and there's going to be some tough losses.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that based on what they have from a schedule standpoint, it's doable. And another thing that they've got going for them is they're getting the right messaging from their head coach. Because shortly after the OBJ trade, Freddie Kitchens came out and said, you know what? We got a great roster on paper, but that doesn't mean anything. We got to dig the foundation, and that begins with the start of the off-season strength and conditioning program, the extra mini camp that they're going to get because they have a new head coach. So all of those things are opportunities for this young team to improve. And we know with young teams, you're going to practice them. They got to develop that chemistry and that rapport. But I feel like this Cleveland Browns team has an opportunity to take a next step from the 7-8-1 season they had last year.
All right, while the Browns schedule is being celebrated, the Raiders' final season in Oakland could be a real doozy. The Silver and Black have the hardest strength of schedule. They face 7 playoff teams from last season, and they also go 7 weeks between home games in Oakland. I don't have high aspirations for the Oakland Raiders here. I think their last season in Oakland is going to be a disaster. I think Antonio Brown and John Gruden and Derek Carr are as combustible a triangle as we have in the NFL, and I expect it to explode.
Wow. I don't think it's going to be a disaster. I think they're going to lose.
That's a disaster.
No, it's not. You got to understand what this is. This is, one, going to set a low bar for them when they relocate to Vegas. And Vegas is investing in the brand of the Raiders, the excitement that the Raiders bring. And then they're going to feel like we're really a part of you ascending because you guys came out here on a low level. Think about what the Rams were able to do in L.A. and how they left St. Louis. That was a bad team in St. Louis. The owner went on record, was talking bad about the fans. They basically were like, we don't want to be here. And it had a lot of bad blood. Landed in L.A., and things started to build. L.A. feels a part of that building. And the Vegas mantra, the Vegas mindset is, come out here with barely anything to your name. Come out here with $5. You never know. In Vegas, you might leave with 5 G's, right? Come out here with only 3 wins. It's okay. This is Vegas, baby. We're investing in you. And they may build themselves up from that point.
Well, as a franchise, you're either selling winning or you're selling hope. And right now, there's not a whole lot of hope that you can sell based on the current roster for the Los Angeles Raiders. I mean, Oakland Raiders. Las Vegas Raiders soon to be.
Mm-hmm.
But in looking at this situation, I don't see a purpose to the losing that they're going to do in 2019. Like, it would be a different story if you're talking about John Gruden having a young quarterback to go out there with and develop and, of course, get him on the job training. But that's not the case. You have Derek Carr as your guy. And John Gruden has been on the record saying that he's not necessarily sold as Derek Carr being their quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going to happen. I think it'll be real interesting next week what they do with those three first-round draft picks. That'll give us a better idea of the direction of this franchise and the identity that John Gruden wants to develop. But, I mean, you mentioned it. They play a home game September 15th against the Kansas City Chiefs, and then they're not back at home until November 3rd.
Right.
So, I mean, this is not a lot of –
a lot of losing.
You can talk about the schedule on paper, whether it's an easy schedule or a tough schedule, but I can tell you this. If you're not at home for a month and a half in the regular season, it's going to be hard to win a lot of football games.
That's a grind, and again, I get looking ahead to Las Vegas, but the purpose of this season may turn into tanking for Tua. And that, to me, will, instead of this great farewell in Oakland, by October, whenever they do come back home, you potentially an empty stadium. They know that the Raiders are a hot mess and they're not winning anything, and they're really tanking for Tua. Because when I look at why they're saying, you know what, we're good this year on this quarterback draft, I don't think they don't want to obviously trade up to get Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
They don't think much of Dwayne Haskins. So, to me, they're saying, you know what, next year.
Well, they could be saying that next year, but there's a team in South Florida that's going to have something to say about that, too.
Yeah.
Because if you look at that roster,
the Dolphins.
they're not as talented as the Raiders, and that's saying a lot. That's a low bar to clear.
But the Raiders, it's interesting. There's already going to be a bad breakup in the making when you talk about the Oakland fans and them going to Las Vegas. The extension on the Oakland Coliseum just to play one more year there instead of playing that year at some collegiate stadium in Las Vegas. They're already upset in Oakland that they're leaving them. So this is not the Warriors going from Oracle to a new arena in the Bay. This is them leaving the state. So there's no way you're going to make that a better situation. This is not going to be a farewell tour at home games.
But just think about this. Just think of this element. Antonio Brown has spent his entire career playing in front of what some could argue the best fan base in football.
Yeah.
And again, that's a competition.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas right now is upset. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. But
Raiders.
Pittsburgh, best fan, packed stadium, Super Bowl expectations every year he's been in the NFL. To now, what happens in October and November in Oakland when they're way behind the Chiefs and the Chargers, empty stadium? We're about to see Antonio Brown, in my view, potentially act up more than he's ever acted
up. No, you got to know the DNA of Antonio Brown. One, he's a small school player like you and I. So, like, I used to play in front of 4,000 people. So, when I got to the league, I was like, this is gravy, but this ain't the meat and potatoes. I can ball out
Antonio
with no one here.
Brown hasn't gotten brand new, Marcellus.
In terms of his game, he's going to always give you that grind. His work ethic is second
to none. He takes helicopters to training camp, Marcellus. This dude is brand new. Central Michigan. Way in,
and he has never shortchanged you in effort. So helicopter or not, it's okay. If you show up in training camp in a silk robe, as long as you put that work in, and I think he's going to always put that work in, especially this year with the beef with Juju, bullseye on him, no?
Pointing fingers.
Well, here's what I'll say about AB. Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of the stuff that went on in Pittsburgh was because he felt disrespected by the organization. They wouldn't give him any guaranteed money beyond the first year of that contract extension, but they treated Ben Roethlisberger's contract a little bit different. And I think that was a little insight in terms of what the source of his
tomorrow.
Attitude would, yeah. would be.
He was disrespected but by he got new Rosenhaus, but his agent.
But he got more respect because he got money from the Oakland Raiders and John Gruden. Yeah. They just paid him. They just showed him that respect.
Yeah,
you show a player
that's how you show love.
You pay him. Mm-hmm. So they took care of that. So, yeah, they might do a lot of losing this year. But AB just got to remember, they gave a receiver on the wrong side of $30 million in guaranteed money.
Whitlock and Wiley joining the show now is Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes and Fox Sports NBA analyst Iceberg Jim Jackson. All right, let's move to a big story in Houston where James Harden did James Harden things last night, including this shimmy on Ricky Rubio that he ultimately couldn't finish, but the MVP still had a triple-double as the Rockets took a 2-0 series lead on the Jazz. The praise was high for Harden last night with Houston head coach Mike D'Antoni saying, when Harden gets it rolling, nobody's better. Charles Barkley added that Harden is the best offensive player of his generation. He threw in a couple of qualifiers about giving the rules and things like that and where the game is right now. I disagree with Chuck. I think that Harden is playing for Mike D'Antoni and Mike D'Antoni's system. That benefits him. Harden gets to do whatever the hell he wants to do with the ball. Put Kevin Durant in that offensive system and just give him free reign. Kevin Durant's the best offensive player.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tough because Kevin Durant is out there. I mean, Patrick Beverley plays a couple good games of defense against KD, and all of a sudden we don't even enter him into this conversation. That said, I understand where Barkley's coming from and largely agree with him. I actually would say that. James Harden doesn't have the curse of being gifted that most athletes have. He's talented enough athletically to be in that Kobe Jordan conversation, but on the lower end, I respect that. But what he doesn't suffer from is the craftiness, the understanding of the rules, the application, the subtleties.
The burden of playing defense.
Look, we ain't gonna go all into that. He said offensive. That lets me know you don't even want to have this argument.
No,
you're gonna
start
talking about defense. He said best offensive.
If you don't gotta play defense, it's easier to play offense.
Look, you don't burn energy on the other end. All I'm gonna say is he is Jordan and Kobe. A little off on the athleticism, but got the three-point shot, which makes you unguardable. If I got to go out there 30 feet, it's a problem, and that's what James Harden does. He capitalized on it.
When I think of the best scorer, I think of all-around game. And I have arguments a lot of times with my friends when they're arguing about who's the better scorer between Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry. They say, well, Steph is averaging more. I said, well, that three-point ball helps. The three-point ball, the emphasis on the three-point shot, obviously helps the likes of Stephen Curry and helps the likes of James Harden. But if you're talking about pure score, I'm thinking about somebody like a Kobe Bryant who go inside, outside, put the ball in the post, you could take the man outside, dribble penetration, everything. And just for that saying, that's why I have to go to Kevin Durant. Obviously, like I said, the three-point ball is dominated by Steph and James because they'll shoot 15 to 23 is a game now. And that three-point ball is a serious weapon. But all around basketball totality game, I have to go with the likes of Kevin Durant.
And James Harden, the thing I love about this part of it is that he's taking advantage of what the rules are, which is that you can't hand check, that he's able, that sidestep, that's not a travel, that's a travel. Mm-hmm. Now Chris Paul is doing it. Mm. I mean, he did it last night in the corner. So he didn't come in with this over hyped athleticism. He's not 6'9", okay? He's not an ultra-quick point guard. What he figured out in D'Antoni's system, which I played in when Steve Nash, you know, got the back-to-back MVPs, he allows the point guard to control, look at Jeremy Lin, to control the ball. Yeah. Jeremy Lin had, that's how he got paid, was with Mike D'Antoni. So all of those factors, I think that factor into why James Harden is in, I mean, where he's at right now. And I'm going to tell you this, though. The points that he scores, especially when Chris Paul was out, they weren't empty baskets because they resulted in W. So you got to give him credit from that perspective because there's a lot of guys that score that don't win. Anthony Davis scored a lot of points. It didn't result into wins. James Harden's big numbers, 50-plus points, 40-plus points, they weren't empty numbers.
Hold on. Don't let him off the hook. He ain't said who's the best scorer.
Oh, best scorer is Kevin Durant.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Scorer. It ain't no question because he can do it in multiple. You're not putting James Harden on the post, okay? You're not putting him at the mid post with one dribble. You know what I mean? No.
But you know what's unfair to James Harden? Every time he climbs the next level in terms of respect, in terms of him being a part of the all-time greats, we always go back to system, or we always go back to his coaching and the style he plays in. But everybody has to stay within the context of what their scheme is.
We're not disrespecting him, Marcellus.
Well, hold on. If you're not saying that James Harden, who has the second most points per game in the three-point era since Jordan, he's averaging 36 since Jordan, and he's not the only guy out there who's been playing under this system and in the NBA.
Moving to Golden State, and what do those numbers look like? And move Kevin Durant.
But see, his usage rate is going to go down. He's not going to be at 40% usage rate.
Right.
So if you put me in that system like that when I was younger, I'm going to put points up.
I'm not dissing Jimmy Jackson.
Hold up.
But you know what? He is actually doing that.
And that's my point is that he's with the perfect system to have the ball in his hand the whole time.
I've heard this argument so many greats. Tom Brady loses because of the system, because of Belichick. And James Harden, well, he's with D'Antoni and his system usage rate. Look, there is no defense to what he's doing. Right now, I love me some KD, 23 and 21 in the first two games.
Right.
There's a little defense against him, and it's not Patrick Beverly. It's the fact that the flow offense, and everyone needs to touch it a couple times before coach says shoot. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's a way that he can get off his game. Golden State tonight is going to get into plan B basketball. Now, you could say that if he was there with D'Antoni, Kevin Durant wouldn't even be thinking twice and would just be jacking him up. I like KD more as a scorer, but I'm not going to slight James Harden
okay,
in that
conversation. Your football reference, how many quarterbacks look good in that New England system when Tom Brady was out? Didn't Matt Castle get paid?
Matt Castle's the only one for a long time. No, everybody else a game or two.
But he got paid, right?
Oh, yeah.
Garoppolo? Maybe.
Well, I mean, that's two games.
Maybe. But what I'm saying, you can go back to when you want to use that reference, that guys who stepped in and played in that system look good in that system. And they got paid from that. I'm not taking anything from James Harden.
We're both not. I think that's the point.
I'm just making sure.
It's not a slight. If anything,
at all.
If anything, he's number two. We're just giving a reason.
Oh, I'm not a slight.
Okay.
My man getting buckets, man.
I wouldn't even put him number two.
Woo!
Because I really believe.
What?
What is going on?
I really believe if Steph Curry played in that system, he would put up 2K numbers. It would look like NBA 2K out there.
I've seen Steve Nash
in that system. Yeah. I've seen everybody eating that. Amari Stoudemire. Yeah. Didn't he have
How much did Nash average?
What? He 17, got two MVPs.
But 17 points. That ain't 36.
No. But
stop, look, y'all.
Move Steph Curry to Houston and just Steph. Here's the ball. Nice. You don't got to pass it to nobody.
We hate reality.
You don't have
move him here and go there.
You don't have to play defense on the other end.
That'd be nasty.
I'll tell you who looked good in that system. Raymond Felton did when he was in New York for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay? Raymond Felton looked like a different point guard before they traded
Y'all
him.
Y'all don't do that. Y'all hold know up, he had other issues.
Hold up. What I'm saying, though, for that short period of time before they traded him with Carmelo.
And Raymond Felton damn near like me and out there.
Come on.
That's the point. But if he would have stayed Raymond Felton, he'd be still balling.
They was talking about maybe potentially him being one of the better point guards in the East at that time. But he was in D'Antoni's system.
Had all-star consideration.
That's all I'm saying.
Hey, man.
Put it this way. I don't want to guard James Harden because it's impossible. You know what I mean? It's impossible to guard him.
I'm listening to Donovan McNabb, Alex Smith. Patrick Mahomes, all bald, right? But aren't there levels to how you do it in a system? Because they all had Andy Reid, but damn, Patrick Mahomes, 50? First time starting? Like, can y'all respect that? Nash, okay, 17 points. No, he looked good.
But Nash didn't have to score like that.
Forget, the pace was different then. They weren't scoring.
That's true.
All
I'm saying is this guy is doing it to a level where even the all-time greats like Barkley's like, show me better. Now, you can imagine better. You can put KD in your mind on D'Antoni's team. You can put Steph, but show me better. It gets a little
silent. I can show you a better scorer in Kevin Durant because there's not one spot on the court where Kevin Durant can't get multiple buckets.
Agreed.
That's not the same with James Harden. Now, he gets to all those spots with the ball in his hands and going one-on-one and doing all that, but
he gets to the free throw line more than all of them.
Yeah, he does. He games the system. He's a tremendous. He's a cheat code. Joining the desk now are Fox PBC analyst Sean Porter and Ray Boom Boom Mancini. I'm a little old, Ray. I remember
you. Man, I appreciate it.
Real.
You know, Sean, Marcellus, I don't know if you know this, but that's the tightest jacket that's ever been worn on.
Oh, no, he didn't.
And the most in-shaped guy to wear.
Yeah, that's the biggest.
Ding, 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 ding. Bring it up.
What's going on here?
Before I reach over and take a swipe at Sean, let's talk about this fight here this weekend. Both of you, what makes both of these guys, Garcia, Granados, what makes them both so dangerous?
Well, Danny Garcia is a sharpshooter. You know, Danny Garcia, no, Sean's going to be able to answer this better because he's fought both guys. But Danny Garcia is a sharpshooter. And he waits, counters guys, punches good with the left hook. And, you know, both hands, good puncher. But he'll wait. He'll set traps for you, let you fall in them traps. Granados is an action guy. He's, you know, he throws punches and bunches, always in great shape, coming at you. You know, he's coming forward all the time. For Garcia, to me, he's got to set them traps and let Granados, you know, fall into him. to beat a guy like this. But he's got to be in his top. He's got to be in great shape because Gernot's going to be on top of him.
I agree 100% with Boom Boom. And that's the best part about this fight. You have a guy in Danny Garcia that takes his time, likes to pick his punches, and he's very, very precise. But then you got another guy, Adrian Granados, who's very, very energetic in the ring. He's going to come at you nonstop for the course of the fight. And when those two styles clash, it's like, you know, it's almost as like Danny's one punch against Adrian Granado's 100 punches. You know, it's like who's going to win that match. So
now let's see Garcia goes out there and wins on Saturday. Would that put him in line to fight Pacquiao? We know everybody wants a piece of that Pacquiao fan base.
Well, look, first of all, my brother right here is one of the top in the world. Why not, they did it once. Why not do it again? Mm-hmm. Look, I'm about the best fights for the biggest money. These guys, you know, it's about money now. They got to make the biggest fight because there's a lot. Look, there's Sean, there's Danny, there's Keith Thurman, there's Pacquiao, there's a lot of Errol Spence. There's a lot out there, and they're all with the same promoter, so could be fights could be made. Manny Pacquiao now, fights can be made. Do a round robin tournament. Let's do it. And these fights can be made.
Oh, that sounds so great, so utopian. But you know that's not the
world. But you with the same promoter can be done.
Yeah.
Because they're with the same promoter, and like I said, Sean has fought them all. Danny's fought them all. I mean, why not make it? It could happen.
And you can't fake the funk. You can't leave Danny Garcia in the background, especially if he comes out and wins tomorrow, or excuse me, Saturday, in fantastic form. You can't just leave him in the background. He's got two losses against myself, former world champion when I beat him, also Keith Thurman, who's a world champion now. Those aren't bad losses. Neither of us really, you know, stumped him into the ground or anything like that. Those are very formidable losses. And another win against a guy, a very energetic guy like Adrian Granados. And really, I do think that fight catapults him right back to the top. And let's say it's not Manny Pacquiao. It could be in a rematch, Sean Porter. It could be in a rematch, Keith Thurman. I think that puts him right back in line for one of those fights.
You fought them both. You beat them both.
Yeah.
Who's going to win?
I think Danny Garcia is going to win. I'm betting on him to land that big punch. And you know, even with me, you know, a lot of times my pressure is what breaks a guy down.
Right.
That's what Adrian Granados is betting on. He's betting on his pressure and his punch output to break down Danny Garcia, both physically and mentally. But I have a feeling that somewhere, some way, Danny's going to be able to keep him off with some of those good jabs, those good strong jabs, and he's got a heck of a right hand as well that he could land.
Now, we were talking about Danny Garcia. What's next for him? What's next for you, man? Errol Spence, I've seen you on record talking about that
man,
fight
listen,
would be next level.
Yeah.
Keith Thurman.
I'm honestly playing it cool right now. I think we're still looking at that fight with Errol Spence.
Mm.
And, you know, as soon as I can blast something, I'm going to blast it real hard for you guys. Yeah.
That's going to be major.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, listen, they told me in my ear that somehow you guys are from Ohio and had a problem with my Browns take.
Look,
y'all do know the Browns history. I mean, y'all from y'all know this.
I was back when Leroy Kelly was my guy. Erich Barnes, Leroy Kelly. You know, look, here's the difference. How about this? This year, the head coaching job of the Browns last year was the most coveted job for the NFL.
Yeah.
Because we're fun to watch now. Look, it's hard to watch them.
So how come they didn't
this
get
last
qualified?
No.
Whoa!
This Danny guy. Freddie Kitchens brought him into
the Everything changed when he came in.
Greg Williams was the head coach. Why didn't they give it to him?
No. I like Greg.
Because the offense is what led them in.
That's right. Freddie Kitchens is the guy. They're relevant again. And they're fun to watch. Even the games they lost, you know as well as they were in them. They had a chance to win those games. So all I'm saying is, got to watch here. We're back in the game. Cleveland football is back, and they're fun to watch. That's all you want, man. Be entertaining.
I think we got everything that it takes to close out games now. I think that's the separation between last year and this year. We have some more components, some more weapons to close out games, and that's what
you
have to do.
So you can take the paper bags off the head, all right?
The dog pound is for real, man.
Yeah.
That's a real place.
Sean, I did want to say, the next time you're on the show, I'm going to talk with Wardrobe. You don't got to wear your little brother's jacket on this show.
Stop it. Hey, check these out. Check these out. Check them out. That's where I'm at with mine. Baby, so
I just got one question.
You can't even get your leg up.
Marcellus, I got one question.
I got sweat.
How did Jason take a body shot?
I
don't know. One body shot, man. That might that changed that conversation real quick.
It's easy to land. I tell you that.
Never see his hand again. Get swallowed up.
No problem. Get off my homeboy.
Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Gang, gang. Marcellus and Jim Jackson, Jason Whitlock, time for my favorite segment, Antisocial. Darnell Smith.
Whoa,
man.
I'm feeling good right
look
now.
Look at him.
I know.
Gee, I said.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Your fresh lineup, Jim.
Come on, you know, keep it crispy. Tight. Take it, baby.
What's popping on the Twitter streets?
Yeah, we're going to start with LeBron James. As we know, he's been reported that LeBron has had trouble recruiting stars to join him in Space Jam 2, which begins filming this summer.
Like the Lakers, huh?
Right. His teammate, Lonzo Ball, said he's down, though. Lonzo was asked if he was going to be in the sequel and said, you have to ask LeBron. LeBron knows he would love to be in it, so we'll see what happens. Mm. Would it be awkward now if LeBron doesn't cast Lonzo in the film?
Yeah, Lonzo certainly sounds thirsty, and he's put LeBron in quite the spot now.
Really. Especially if we teammates and boys, it's easy to say, nah, son. I ain't gonna quench your thirst. No, I love Lonzo. Every time I bring up Lonzo, I bought all the shoes. I got all the Triple B memorabilia and all the stuff. And guess what? Every time you bring up his name, he's polarizing. Some people love him, some people hate him. You don't want to have Space Jam attached to somebody that people really are that polarized against. So
you don't want to see him in there?
I don't think they'll put him in there. I would love to see him in there, but I don't think they'll put him in there.
LeBron can always say, listen, man, I got it, but the director over here, he's sort of choosing to get this kind of player, yeah. this kind of
she
person.
She wants a basketball star. Yeah.
Stop.
See? That part. We've been yelling at the screen. He ain't even that good.
like, why he in the movie?
Why he in the movie?
D-list basketball players? Don't see that.
Not D.
Cut up, you know.
He might as well get somebody from the D-League. He can be in the crowd. He can be in the movie, but maybe not as one of the main characters. How about
that?
Who
watches Space Jam 2 anyway? Who watches?
All right, y'all. Moving on to Zion Williamson. Duke basketball posted a video last night of Zion throwing down a dunk with a confetti-filled basketball for the gender reveal of a Duke staffer soon-to-be-born child. The family went wild after finding out they were going to have a new baby boy. We all know Zion is most likely going to be the number one draft pick. So this is a good use of his time?
Oh, that's the question?
Yes, sir.
Who wrote that question? Yeah, man, that's good, man. First of all, that's great to give back to the people that helped you build it up on the team, on the squad. You know, somebody around the staff, that's love. Right now, he could do no wrong, and that's just a great, great way to do something.
Spread joy. That's what Zion does. He's got that Magic Johnson-like personality.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, love this.
I love it, too, just because that's Zion. That's the kind of person that he is, the personality. Again, the unselfishness. He can laugh at himself at times, but he can have a good time like this. That has stardom written all over it in regards to what he can do endorsement-wise moving forward. Who thought that Blake Griffin would do like some of the commercials he did? He was great at it.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because he showed personality.
Yep.
This is showing personality.
Shaq, all the guys that when you get a little more of your persona out there, it works.
You
ain't feeling it?
No, I like it. I love it.
Moving on to NFL.
You can, though.
As we talked about earlier, NFL schedules were released yesterday. Several teams, like the Panthers, have fun making unique videos highlighting each matchup. The Falcons did a dope Game of Thrones-style video. If you look closely, there's a couple of shots of the rival in the New Orleans Saints throwing their controversial loss to the Rams. I thought it was hilarious. Do y'all think the Saints should clap back here?
Too late now. If they had a video already out and they ain't do it, too late. You got to wait for next year's schedule.
I'm so glad they did this, though, because somebody needs to be poking fun at Sean Payton and the Saints who have still been whining or whatever. So, yeah, I think this is great by the Falcons. However, I do think the Saints will sweep them next year.
I liked it because I'm a Game of – you don't watch Game of Thrones, so I
– Nah.
I do.
Oh, you do?
Nah,
of course.
I don't.
Oh, he
I'm
don't.
I'm part of that 1%.
Yeah,
we don't. And I'm proud, too.
So you don't even know the theme part of it, why it makes it even –
And that's
so good.
Not helping your life knowing it either. But
it's crazy. Like, what do you mean?
Game of Thrones is overrated. Can y'all stop talking about this
man,
show?
Man, no, we not stop talking about it.
No.
First 3-4 seasons were not overrated.
Okay,
recently, what's that? You're right.
Watch Snowfall or something. Watch some.
I watch Snowfall.
Really
I love Snowfall.
Well, there it is. Stay in reality. Bro.
Right. All right, y'all.
Snacks.
Switching back to the NBA, where we all know Dirk Nowitzki just retired and is finally able to enjoy himself. Nowitzki said in a recent interview that he had his first glass of wine after being absent for over 10 years. We all know wine has played a big role in LeBron's life this season, even going as far as bringing a glass to a couple games. But does Dirk make wine loving LeBron look bad here?
Did you just say wine and abstinence?
Yeah. Abstinence. Yeah, he hasn't drank wine in 10
that's
years.
That's abstinence.
That ain't usually how we think of abstinence. But I mean, hydrate the way you want to.
Put him on, he was on the wagon.
Yeah, yeah, he got off it. 10 years, no drink? Turn 30.
No, hold on, he said no wine.
Oh, okay.
No wine.
Oh,
yeah.
So he had like some Casa Dragones?
Listen, I seen Dirk turned up before in some spots in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
Coming at Hennessy.
Beer.
This was a while ago.
Oh, he beer. Yeah.
It might have been some clear stuff.
No, he might be Hennessy.
It might be some clear. Oh, yeah. It might be Hennessy. Hold up. You know what, though?
We know why.
He might have in his car that Crown Royal bag, that purple bag. He might have that.
Wifey, like, you better. You better.
You're going to be with me, Dirk. You better.
Crown and Coke.
Yeah.
Crown and Coke, baby.
Yeah. So I don't know what
the. I do. Look, the guy turned 30, gave up wine to keep in tip-top shape. It's a little bad look for LeBron.
Man. Oh.
LeBron should be drinking something beyond wine. Why?
What, yak? Sugar? Like, I'd rather give up yak than wine. He did it the opposite way. Dirk did the wrong way. Legal.
It's legal.
It's legal.
Legal.
Take that legal, Dirk. Move to L.A., Dirk.
Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Got that legal on.
All right, y'all. I mean, a lot has changed in the last 24 hours for your boy.
Whoa.
What? A lot has changed, man. I received a shout-out from my boy Lil Wayne. Shout-out to Weezy.
Oh. You know,
so, and it's 34 million Twitter followers. They see me as well. So now I'm a social media superstar. So my question is it time for y'all to pay me?
Hold on. What evidence it is?
Yeah,
now. Where's the tweet at?
We need some receipts.
No, no.
Where the receipt?
Talk to him.
No, nah.
He posted it. I saw it.
But where the receipt said on this screen?
Yeah, right here. How do we do this without the tweet?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he didn't put it up
them
there.
Them chains ain't real either.
That's why I need to pay me, Marcella. That's the question.
Well,
we gonna upgrade his shirts.
Yeah,
34 million Twitter followers.
What did I tell you about the T-shirts and how valuable they would be?
It lasted a while. It's good, but
T-shirts, man. Look at you. We got Wayne jocking you now.
This shirt ain't paying the rent on the first. Bills are due.
We'll upgrade that to Egyptian cotton.
Next level.
You must be on my side,
Marcellus. You know, I don't see no receipts. If you had a receipt, maybe we'll talk some money.
Man, my boy in the back, Rodman, hook me up with a receipt, y'all.
We like Doc Rivers. We drop 2K out of our pockets all day.
I ain't
either,
bro. Hey, they gonna upgrade your access around the lot, bro. They gonna give you the opportunity to go to premieres and different.
I can do that
like
right
that.
Now. I need the bread, Jimmy.
You bread?
Look, I need your bread.
This is true.
What?
I brought Darnell into my dressing room today and had a long conversation with him about a new line of T-shirts, seeing how well this one worked.
Okay.
So I feel like we've already addressed the pay deal. Darnell, did we not talk about that this morning, about a new line of T-shirts for you?
We talked about it, but I didn't know that was the upgrade. I'm trying to get the shirts and the bread. I'm trying to get the shirts and the bag.
And had human resources there with me the same time we was having this conversation.
You need an agent, because he sounded like Suge up there.
Man, what are you, Suge? He sounded like you for real,
he buying you more cars instead of giving you your money.
I'm about to be like Dre then.
There it is,
Hey, man, you better watch out. You might have you hanging over a balcony.
Man, look, I got my receipt. Can we zoom in?
I got the receipt right here. I saw the tweet.
You saw it?
I saw it too. And he threw your name in there too. What do you call you, Slime?
That's the homie, Slime. You know what I'm saying? Slime. But how about an Empire DVD set?
I'm done with y'all, man. I'm gonna talk to the higher ups.
Schedule a meeting.
What else they got?
Voice your concern, but put it on the table what you're looking for. Yeah. All they can do is say no.
Whitlock and Wiley, joined once again by Chris Haynes and Jim Jackson. Let's talk some NBA. Sponsored by Capital One. What's in your wallet? Game 3 of the Warriors, Clippers, is here in L.A. tonight. Marcellus is hoping his squad can shut down Kevin Durant for a third time.
Aight.
In Game 1, Durant was ejected after getting into a scuffle with Patrick Beverley. What? In Game 2, Durant had 9 turnovers and fouled out as the Warriors blew a 31-point lead. But it was Durant's 8 shots in Game 2 that were a hot topic heading into tonight's matchup.
I'm not going to get in the way of the game because, you know, I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverley. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Y'all know who I am. They're playing a gimmick defense, which has been working, top blocking everything on the perimeter. So guys not even looking at the three-point line. They're just forcing guys inside the three-point line. So for us, when I get the ball in my spots, you know, I got a pest, Patrick Beverly, who was up underneath me. Well, I could definitely shoot over top and score every time if it's a one-on-one situation.
I don't know how many shots he got the other night, 7, 8. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely he needs to be more aggressive. He needs, it's playoffs, and he can get any shot he wants anytime. So I want to see him get 20 shots, 30.
Mm. All right, a little contradictory message in here. Mm. The coach thinks he can get shots. KD saying the defense is taking away shots, and I got to be honest with you, I kind of side with Kevin Durant. I kind of like his mindset. That's as confident and as assured as I've heard Kevin Durant. I like that version of Kevin Durant. I like his explanation for what was going on, and I like, look, man, I'm Kevin Durant. Hmm. I ain't got to explain nothing about me on the offensive end. Here's what's going on. Here's what's happening. We'll have some, the inferred thing was like, we'll have some adjustments, and I'll be back to being Kevin Durant. I like it.
Yeah, I do like it, what KD was saying. I think there was some part of KD that was like, y'all are getting brand new with this. If you've been watching the Warriors, especially the last 15 games, going into the latter part of the regular season, he even talked about it. This is the way we've been playing. His shot production's been going down. He's been second on the team with assists. Like, this is the guy who's like, I'm a part of this ball flow motion offense. So even if I have the mismatch, I'm not going to just take full advantage of it because everyone needs to get their touches. He said it too, not to get in the way of the game, game plan. And this is where the Clippers are looking good. They're going to attempt to get this team to play plan B basketball. Plan B basketball is as soon as you get the ball, just shoot. And then we hear the complaints of yesteryear about Kevin Durant with the Warriors. Oh, too much ISO, Kevin Durant. You stopping the ball. It's a flow offense. So if the Clippers could get them where you even said it, sounds like a little contradiction there. That's plan B basketball for the Warriors, and the Clippers may have them in a good spot.
Look, no disrespect to the Clippers.
It sounds like here it comes.
But here it comes. Kevin Durant can go out of his way and shoot 20, 30 shots, and the Warriors will be fine. They can do it. Like, he doesn't have to continue to be this pass first forward who's worried about getting everybody else involved, then getting his shots later. It's the Clippers. They can do all right. Look, and look, like I said, they came back from 31. Hey, historic comeback. Great, not taking anything from them. But KD has to understand, like, we all know he gets bothered by all the talk that he joined this team. The team carried them to the finals, and he got his finals MVP. So what's going to be the talk? Even if they do win this series, the Warriors, and Kevin Durant continues to shoot 10, 12 shots, getting 18 points, what's going to be the talk? That Patrick Beverly was up in his grill the whole time and disrupted his whole confidence, his offensive rhythm. So let's do without that narrative. KD, go out there and get your buckets. The Warriors will continue to win because they've been doing it the last three or four years. He'll be fine. I think this is the time he needs to be aggressive, like Steve Kerr said, impose his will, and then take matters into his own hands and take care of Beverly once and for all.
Well, he can't be too aggressive where he creates a black hole in the system. Because one thing Kevin Durant loves is the system which Golden State plays. The ball is moving, yeah. Bodies are moving. So if he begins to go one-on-one and breaks that up, they're not playing Golden State basketball. But what I do like, there's ways within that. When you put him at the high post and the elbow, now he can go one-on-one. You can't double-team in the middle of the court. Put him on the low block a little bit, move around. It's ways within what they do well without him forcing it, taking opportunities away, that he can still be aggressive. But Kevin Durant's biggest thing was he wanted to play with a group of guys that were unselfish. So why now all of a sudden turn into a selfish player to try to get some get back and disrupt everything that you're trying to do, which is win? Because ultimately, the thing that you want to do is win.
Chris, here's why I disagree with you, and this is why I like what KD's saying. It's like, are y'all kidding me? I've been the MVP. I've led the league in scoring. I've been the postseason MVP. And in game two, playing the proper way, we were up 31. The game was over. Hmm. What he's saying is, it's not Patrick Beverly. We fell asleep. We got up 31 and quit. But playing the right way, We got up 31. And that's not with me being a ball hog. Mm-hmm. And he goes, y'all can overreact to the fact that we fell asleep up 31 and act like, oh, Patrick Beverly done shut y'all down. He's like, nah, man. What? We were up 31.
Well, I agree with you. But knowing KD how I know him, if this narrative continues and they get past this round, but everybody says, Patrick Beverly shut you down. Even though I know that dude. It's going to bother him. So,
Did he sound bothered there?
That's right now.
Hold on.
Because there's a lot of time to make a move.
Hold on now. He had three shots at halftime. They up 23. Kevin Durant went a year or more in OKC with a lot of noise directed at him, and he was playing cover for Russ and also said, bring it on. Like, when we say that KD is sensitive, sensitive could be you take it in and how do you respond to it, or it's sensitive could be just the fact that, you know what, I'm just telling you straight up how I feel, but I'm still going to act accordingly. He has never got out of skin in terms of the way he's going to play and respect the system. You may say he's sensitive, but that doesn't mean he's going to react different.
I didn't say that. All I'm saying is this.
How's he going to act different?
Within, look, Jim, you talking about don't force anything? JJ, he's 7 foot. Patrick Beverly's 6'1". He's not forcing anything. Shoot over the top.
There he is.
No.
He's forcing everything. If he gets the ball and he has the ball within that system for 20 seconds, that's not Golden State basketball. The ball moves with freedom. Yeah, then you get into that secondary pass, and then you go into – but if he's coming down, and now one dribble, the ball comes up the court, he's taking a quick shot. Another time he comes down, he handles the ball, and that's all he does. The ball doesn't get moved. Now that's a different Golden State team.
Listen, I'm going to – we always – oh, LeBron James, he's a basketball genius. I've never heard LeBron James talk as intelligently about basketball as what I just heard from Kevin Durant.
Doesn't mean he doesn't think that way. No, it doesn't mean he doesn't even –
No, I know. You don't have to cape up for LeBron.
No, ain't no cape up.
We're talking about Kevin Durant.
You just heard this yesterday.
We're talking about
Kevin Durant. What did you think of KD 2 days ago then?
We're talking about Kevin Durant right now. What he just said was – they're trying to bait me into shots where I would shoot 43% from the field. And I'm not taking the bait. And he just said, which was left out of this, what he said happened, was left out of our highlight, was Patrick Beverly's grabbing me around the waist. He's hugging me. He's doing all this other stuff. And he goes, that's fine. The refs aren't calling that. But as soon as I do anything in retaliation or in reaction to this dude hugging me, they're calling me for fouls, and they fouled me out of the game. That's unfair. And what he goes, y'all can overreact to our losing, blowing a 31-point lead. Y'all can pretend like Patrick Beverly got the best of me. But all that's happened is the refs are letting this dude tackle me, and I can't push him off of me. It's the damn ref.
True that.
I don't know.
True that.
Joined by Chris Haynes and Jim Jackson. Time to play Hot Clock. We'll each get just 24 seconds to give our hot takes, some of the biggest stories in the NBA. All right, let's start with the brow. New Orleans has a new general manager in David Griffin, and he's not closing the door on Anthony Davis staying in the Big Easy. Griffin cites his long and successful history with Clutch Sports as a reason for hope. Marcellus.
Yes, sir.
Scale of 1 to 100, any chance AD stays in New Orleans?
That number is the same number before any Hail Mary play you see in football. So like 5% chance. But
5%, there is a chance.
Yeah, there is a chance. This is a Hail Mary. He has a relationship, obviously, with Clutch Sports, and that makes him have a relationship with AD. And I will put the onus on AD. What went wrong for you in New Orleans? I don't want to hear about old regime. I don't want to hear about anything else. But what is on your items that I can change? And the only thing he can say is market. And then I got to say, you got to go.
Chris, any chance he stays in New Orleans?
I give it a one. And the reason I give it a one is because, look, the way this thing ended at the tail end of that season, the fan base turned against AD. AD clearly wanted to be out. He's wearing shirts saying I'm gone. He went out publicly saying, like, it's time to be somewhere else. Like, it's time for New Orleans to rebuild. They got a new regime. Yes, David Griffin has a relationship with Rich Paul, his agent. But after that, I think they will work together to part ways.
Jimbo, any chance?
0% chance.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. It was 1 to 100.
Donut. I think he's out. I think he's out. I think with David Griffin understanding the dynamics of what's going on, it's time to move on from Anthony Davis. Get what you can. David Griffin understands now he has to build something for him and his legacy as far as him being the, you know, vice president of operations. I do believe the relationship with Rich Paul opens up the door for them now to make a deal somewhere if it's not the Lakers.
I disagree with you two in particular. I'm going 25% chance. Look, Rob Pelinka kept his job because he convinced Jeannie Buss, I can get you Kawhi Leonard. I think David Griffin got this job because he said, you know what? I think I can fix this Anthony Davis situation. I think 75% chance he's wrong, but I do think he has a chance because I don't think things are settled here in Los Angeles as it relates to LeBron James, and Anthony Davis coming to L.A. isn't a guarantee.
If that happened, it would be the bigger comeback than the Tiger Woods.
To Boston, where Kyrie Irving dropped 37 points on my Pacers last night as the Celtics took a 2-0 series lead. Kyrie's future in Beantown is still questionable, but Marcellus, with a deep playoff run, saved the Kyrie and Celtics marriage.
No, you got to know who Kyrie is. He already left a championship squad in Cleveland with LeBron on the roster. The divorce rate tells us all we need to know. half the marriages fail the first time. You know what? Second marriage divorce rates are?
What is that?
Higher. I mean, if you meet somebody tomorrow, oh, he just got out of a relationship and a marriage, but you know, it's gonna work. You got a worse chance. So guess what? Kyrie gone.
He's
man.
Willing to commit. He's also willing to uncommit.
All right, Chris. Look, I'm gonna hold Kyrie to his word. He said before the regular season started that he was going to re-sign with the Boston Celtics. I think Boston is going to go deep. I think Kyrie is going to have a phenomenal playoff run. I'm going to hold him to it. He said he's coming back, so I'll leave it at that. I don't need the Fools 24.
Oh, you got the shot off. You're playing a D'Antoni offense. All right. Let's see if we can move to Jim Jackson in a new clock. Jim, can this marriage be saved?
It can be saved, but why are you pointing at me when you're talking about the divorce rate?
Man, you know who you are.
You just pointed over here.
You know who
here.
You are in these streets.
I'm just saying.
In these streets?
I don't even need the shot clock for this. I don't have a clue because Kyrie is one of those guys that until you know, you don't know. He can say one thing today, it's going to be something totally different tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm just playing the back because I don't want to see the second divorce. You know what I mean? It's
going to be worse.
Listen, be worse. I do think this marriage can be saved. Kyrie Irving is somewhat emotional, and if things go well and he has a great run, he started talking last night about having one of those great games and a jersey that matters and means something and putting himself in the same category as Bird, blah, blah, blah. The history of the Celtics, that is a great organization to be a great player. I think there's a chance this marriage could be saved.
You and the captain saver relationship.
You almost went there.
Hold on. You know what he wanted to say.
You almost went there. We 76ers series. Getting a little testy. On Monday night, Joel Embiid delivered his vicious elbow on Jared Allen. After the game, Embiid and Ben Simmons had a laugh about it. At the podium, the Nets found the laughing disrespectful. Marcellus, do you agree that his laughing apology is disrespectful? No. Caris LeVert talking about, he all up in his feelings. Oh, 80s R&B singer sounding buddy. LeVert.
I love LeVert.
Dog, I've been knocked down pancake before. Never knocked out, but knocked down before. And you know what hurt more? Not the press conference, the fact that you knocked me down, dog. Like, the pain of the moment is enough. You going out there laughing and spreading it on social media and all that stuff, to me, is secondary to the pain I felt. So why are you tripping?
See, this is why I have a problem with this era of basketball right now. Because if you really felt it was a sign of disrespect getting elbow in the mouth like that, and if your teammates really took exception to it, the next game, why don't we get some get back? I'm all about get back. I'm all about payback. Lay an elbow in the midsection. Maybe high somewhere. Hey, I ain't saying hurt somebody, but if you want to get back, do some real get back on the court. Yeah. I don't want to hear it.
You ain't going
to
talk about it because that means he ain't going to get back.
Yeah, that's what, exactly.
All right, Jim, you've been through the war.
Yeah.
Is this disrespectful?
No, not at all. If anybody should be upset, it should be Jared Allen for getting hit with the elbow. And he should be able to say something, not his teammates. If he really thinks that it's a bad look because of how he did and he laughed, like you said, in through the course of the game, run Embiid around here a little bit. Let me get him that way. Mm-hmm. That's how you get it back. Mm-hmm. Not disrespectful.
Steve Adams style, baby.
Look. I think it can be disrespectful, and I think it could be a weak look for them complaining about it being disrespectful. I think Joel Embiid intended to be disrespectful. I don't know. Apologize for what? Karl Malone put 20 stitches through Isaiah's head.
Right.
And I don't remember him apologizing. Right. And so he's like, man, these weak dudes need an apology. I'll give you one.
Mm-hmm.
And they should feel disrespected because he intended the disrespect. And Joel Embiid will be waiting for him in the paint. Y'all want to get some get back? I'm here for it.
Can the relationship be saved?
Yeah. It's the NBA. Uncle Jimmy's here. Uncle Jimmy, your thoughts so far on the show?
Whoa. Yeah. First of all, I'm going to get straight to it. With no further ado, we family. We boys. We stick together.
Mm-hmm.
But the big dummy of the day go to the person that tried to set up here and start another fight with Sean Porter setting up here.
Yeah.
What you trying to do, man? I can't help you in that, nephew.
Yeah, don't let that size fool you.
Yeah, man.
Why are you trying to steal Darnell's swag? Ooh. With the Weezy shirt on.
Ah, well, listen here, Waldy. I'm just trying to tell you.
You want a tweet?
Hey.
What?
I'm telling you, Waldy, look here. I put speck on your name. I'm just going to tell you. And by the way, you know what? Just on some old hater, let me tell you about Darnell. I told him, hey, man, me and Waldy boys.
Division.
Listen here. No, here we go. I said, hey, man, we boys.
Conquering divide.
I said, what? Hey, we boys. I said, I'm going to have my boy Lil Wayne send me some Boudin from New Orleans. Darnell said, I didn't know you drank.
Oh, he ain't knowing. Talk about, man.
But you gave him a shout out. Let's get with this, bro. Come on.
What's all going right. on in front of you, though?
All right, let's get to our highlights.
Let's get to our highlights.
Our discussion about blowing. James Harden, who Charles Barkley says is the greatest offensive player of his generation.
Mm.
I disagree with Chuck. Harden is playing for Mike D'Antoni and Mike D'Antoni's system. Put Kevin Durant in that offensive system and just give him free reign. Kevin Durant's the best offensive player.
James Harden doesn't have the curse of being gifted that most athletes have. He's talented enough to be in that Kobe Jordan conversation, but on the lower end, I respect that.
All right, Uncle Jimmy.
There's crack.
Your take on James Harden and Charles Barkley. Greatest offensive
First of all, man, let me explain this to you. Now, I'm going to get this straight up here. Hey, bro, that's your boy. That ain't my boy. I'm telling you. Charles Barkley.
Oh.
I don't grind with Barkley.
That's the homie. What's wrong?
No, nah, because, Fred, let me tell you something, man. I'm going to be honest with you. Barkley been hating on big women since 79.
Oh.
You understand what I'm saying? And I'm here to let y'all know. Ladies, if loving big women is wrong, then Uncle Jimmy ain't never been right. You understand me? I'm going to look you in your eyes, baby. I'm going to tell you. Okay? Charles Barkley sit up there last week cracking them jokes about the halftime show. Because, you know, they were spinning women around up there.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, you don't know what you're missing in San Antonio, boy. If I ever run up on you, I'm looking at you, we're going to have a serious series of miscommunications. You understand? Because you talking about big women like that, hey, man, Merciless, I feel like he coming for me. He tugging at the fiber of my soul.
Right, that's your resume.
He coming at the very being of my existence.
That's your resume. That's who you are.
What about James Harden?
Yeah.
Can we talk about
Bro,
James
let me tell you
Harden
something. Let me tell you. You know why Barkley like Harden? Because they both just alike. Ain't never won nothing.
Oh, dang.
Nothing. You understand? Both of them. Second-rate commercials. He ain't got no commercial on his own. Barkley ain't got no commercial on his own. I got the Brodsky cheese, and it's coming down. Get out of here, man. Hey, let me tell you something. Okay, Harden, let me tell you who you can be. Oh, I can tell you who you won't be. You'll never be Shaq. You'll never be Kenny Smith. You'll always be Charles Barkley. And let me tell y'all this, man.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I ain't Kenny Smith. Hush your mouth, big boy. Let me tell you something. I thought I didn't like Charles Barkley as a player. I ain't never liked him. He always. But boy, as an announcer, sweet Mother Mary and Joseph. Man, did you hear this boy last night? He said, Kenny, let me tell you. Let me tell you something, Kenny. Kenny, if you take James Harden is the best player in the NFL going right now, Kenny. I want to tell you.
He
bar none, can't nobody touch him. Can't nobody dribble. Shaq like, Hey, I'm gonna hit you in the head with a brick, Charles, if you say that again. you sound like a fool. Hey, listen, I'm telling you, Kenny, if you go to Krispy Kreme and you get one of them donuts, I'm telling you, James Harden gonna be right there and he the best player it is. Period. He the best player, period. I'm telling you, Kenny. Kenny, you and Eddie both. You and Eddie both can look at him as
Eddie.
Ernie.
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 I know who I'm talking to. Listen to me, Shaq.
All right, man, we got to get to our...
Barkley's great.
We got to get to our approval rating for James Harden. I've got James as an all-star, 76.
Wow.
24 in job performance, 18 in all-time greatness, 19 in character, and a 15 in authenticity. Not, you know, he had that incident at the strip club where I got dinged him on character. 76 and all.
The hell you gonna ding somebody on character in a strip club?
Yeah, say, well, you had an incident in a strip club. Well, we ain't
didn't threaten
you.
Anybody. I wasn't sued over.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway,
that was before social media, though. We don't know what would happen.
The hell that is.
It's amazing that you have an all-star winning the MVP again, his second in a row. Should be third. I got him at GOAT status. I don't see any major blemishes with him. In terms of job performance, we know how great he is. All-time greatness, tier two, and climbing. All the rest, all love for Harden.
Anybody with a beard like that's hiding something.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.